Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Anne-Marie Lockhart, and you're listening to Vox Poetica's 15 Minutes of Poetry. I'm here today with our poet and guest, Ryan J. Torres. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to start, no interlude, with just a poem you're going to read to us from your first collection. And after you've read it, I would like to talk a little bit about that collection and go from there.
Sounds great. This first one's called Genesis. There was a simpler time, but it didn't last that long. I didn't choose to write poetry. I could have been a carpenter. I could have had a business. I could have had money. I didn't choose to write poetry. He woke me from a glorious sleep with a violent shake when I was much younger and said, "Hey man, I need to crash here for a while." I haven't slept well since. He keeps waking me up in the middle of the night with wild ideas and demands that I write them down for him. He liked the blues and cheap wine, walking outside during rainy nights and stealing the lives of strangers to turn into his next great anything. I'm the only one who pays rent, even though he swears he'll be good for it one day. He never eats my food, even though he's always starving. On his best days, he devours typewriter ribbon and downs Indian ink first thing in the morning. There was a time that he took a vacation and disappeared for months, so I waited for him to come back. I had almost given up hope and settled for the typical and the mundane, but then I saw him rise from the dust on the bookshelves, sit the typewriter, and begin again. And he's still here, for now. We're taking bets on who will die first. Because it's the only thing we don't know about each other.
I'm laughing because I think that's an incredibly universal, relatable poem for anyone who's ever written anything. And the idea of your life being taken over by your muse is really awesome. Okay, let's go right to the beginning. So, Ryan, tell me how you started to write. I mean, I get the poem piece, but let's hear the real piece.
My earliest memory of being interested in writing was when I was about 5 years old, and I had a book bag. It was a Power Rangers book bag, and I used to take pieces of notebook paper and crayons, and I would write words on them as I heard them. I'd spell them the best I could, and then I'd rip them out of the notebook. It is a terrible waste of paper. Looking back. But you don't know any better. So I used to rip it out. I'd crumble them up into balls of paper, and then I would stuff them in this backpack. And then later on, I would bring them out again and just kind of lay them out and look at them or rearrange them. And my mother, she reminded me of this thing a little while ago that I used to do. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, I do vaguely remember that blue backpack and me doing that. And that was what we think was the start of it. But I didn't really start writing poetry until high school. And because I was a what would have been called a jock in high school. I was a wrestler, a football player, and I played baseball, but I always kept a little notebook in my helmet or in my sneakers in my locker. And then I would just kind of write before going onto the field or when I was sitting on the bench between, you know, when it was halftime, I would sit there and write a bit and kind of keep it well hidden because it wasn't usually well received by the other guys. I know that.
Imagine that.
Yeah, yeah. But that was I would say high school is when I started taking it seriously, but I always kind of dabbled.
So the book, the collection that you just read that poem from, tell us a little bit about the origin of that collection, that poem collection.
It is the first, it's kind of a mixed bag of the past, I'd be comfortable saying a decade. I'm 31 now, so yeah, it's probably since I was 21 until it was published in 2017, of just like poems that I enjoyed. And then when I was at a reading, my publisher came up to me and said, "Did you ever think about doing a book?" And I said, "Yeah." So I went home and I started pulling out all these old, I can't say files, because a lot of these poems were tucked into a gym bag in my attic. And several of them were in a filing cabinet the filing cabinet's a mess. It's not even in order. And then in my desk drawers and in notebooks. So I started, like, I had a huge pile on the floor of just poetry, and I started sifting through it. And when I got down to what I have now in poem and other four letter words, I just sent it off. And, collection that was putting it together. And when the funny thing about that is when they said, "You have too much," I just went through, and the poems that I could not remember the first stanza of, I just omitted. And that's how I got my poems down.
You know, it's as good a strategy as any other, I think. I mean, when we talk about crafting a manuscript, there are so many ways to do it. So, you know, you're right there with your method. It worked. Okay, so we talked a little before, and I told you we were going to go here. You also write horror, so let's talk about that right now and get it out of the way, because I'm totally curious. How, why, what, and let's start with that.
How is a process in which I would I'm an only child. So there was a bit about, I was really scared of a lot of stuff growing up because I had this very vivid imagination, and the houses that we lived in were interesting. The first house that my parents and I moved into when I was six, I was five going on six, was a funeral home.
Oh boy.
And so there was that. And my mother claimed to see things all the time. And then it just got piggybacked by Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark by Alvin Schwartz, with the drawings by Stephen Gammell.
Mm-hmm.
I read those religiously. And Bruce Colville books, I think that's how you say his last name. It was like Book of Monsters, Book of Aliens. I read all those. And then I was always told kind of folklore stories growing up, just to kind of keep me out of trouble. In fact, the book that's coming out, it has one horror short story in it, and that serves as a warning that my grandfather told me so that I would stay away from going in the quarry in Anvil, Pennsylvania, which is where he grew up. So it was a combination of all those things, like my book, my second book, A Rustle in the Attic, which is all horror. All those stories stem from the things that I was afraid of. And to this day, I still don't sleep in a four-post bed. That's, the mattresses are raised off the ground. So I kind of, like, our mattresses are on the floor. I always had that thing of, like, if you hang an arm over, something's going to get you. I don't know why it always kind of stuck with me. So things like that. I was always kind of a kooky, scared little kid. And then I became a kooky, scared man. And that was that's the gist of it.
As you write, as you write the horror and as you write poetry, so do you have to kind of split into two different Ryan Torres for that work, or do you, is it one, you know, kind of one writer, one mode, depending on the day kind of a thing?
My poetry is, I wouldn't say there's so much of a split. It's more, my poetry is really based in romantic spontaneity. Like, I'm the kind of guy that pulls his car over to the side of the road when those, you know, those fresh stanzas and that golden sentence or whatever kind of bubbles up, and then I have to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
But my poetry is usually a brain dump. Like, I just, as soon as it's out, I don't play with it or fiddle around with it. I just take it for what it is. And then I've always felt that if I did that, people would be getting the real sense of me in that mind frame using the words that I either purposefully or accidentally meant to use, but that's what they're getting. I try to keep, I don't know, a lot of people, I've gotten to like discussions with people about this where I don't go back and like mess with it or be too hard on myself as far as critiquing goes, because it's supposed to be, you get it out of your head and then you feel better for a little while, or
it's cathartic.
It's very cathartic.
Yeah, I know writers who really work at the editing side and others who never do that, and I like the effects of both of those things when I read their work. So whatever works for you is the thing that you should stick with. And I don't think you're having any problems in that area with their next collection coming along too.
That was go ahead. Sorry.
No, continue.
I was going to say that the horror aspect is I just get an idea and I write down the idea and I stick it in a drawer and then I just let it percolate for a little while. Like there's one story in my second book where it's called can you believe that?
yes.
Welcome Home Martin. That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
Welcome Home Martin. The story came from a house that's down the street from my wife's parents' house. And we've never seen anybody go in and out of that place. There was always this 1989 Dodge Omni sitting in the driveway just with weeds growing off the side of it. And you didn't think anybody lived in it. Like the car never moved. And then one day we drove past and there was this bluish-gray light from a television set on in the bay window and the outline of a head as if somebody was sitting on the couch watching TV. And I was like, oh my God, that is absolutely horrifying. So then I went home and I wrote a story where this couple notices that, they get curious, they get involved, and then it gets involved back. So there's this forth, and won't give too much away, obviously. But.
No, but, give people something to look for.
yeah.
So it is a different process for you, the writing. Now, but tell me where the poetry and the horror come together. I am actually really, really curious about that.
I write horror-based poetry during the fall and winter months, just because September 22nd to November 22nd is my favorite time of year. And I just kind of get into the mind frame of that, because then I'm in the mood for, you know, as soon as the chill hits of fall, I'm ready to sort of, I constantly have that on my mind, because I think about like all this, the stuff that I got into as a kid with this, like that was the time when we would sit in the treehouse and read those books that I mentioned before in the neighborhood. And that was the time when all the good movies that I wasn't allowed to watch came on basic cable and they were edited so I could watch them. I mean, that's how I ended up watching The Shining when I was six. Just like that. And so that's like bringing back that energy every year helps me, like, write or combine the genres together.
It's very inspirational.
Yeah.
Would you read us one of your horror poems, please?
Sure. I like to say that this one is something I typically read to kids, but it's not really a kid-friendly. Yeah, you'll hear it. Some kids, it's a little too much for them, but anyway, it's called Captain Genki. There's no such thing as Captain Genki. That's what my mother said. Just like there are no closet gnomes or dragons under my bed, there is no Captain Genki. We looked it up online. We checked the library and all the books. There was no trace to find. There is no Captain Genki. I talked to all my friends. They haven't seen him, so he can't exist. I wish this all would end, because even as I sit here in the dark and in my bed, Captain Genki stands before me with two eyes glowing red. His jaws are wide and drooling. His fur is matted and greasy. His face is covered in boils and scars. The sight of him makes me queasy. Captain Genki says he's hungry over and over again. And as he moves in closer, I fear this is the end. I thought there was no Captain Genki. That's what my mother said. Oh, why did Mama have to lie and send me straight to bed?
There is a long history, as we know, in literature of horror themes in children's stories. You know, this is not, it's not exactly new terrain, but we are still, in fact, we react with horror every time we hear it, which is bizarre. But, you know, and some of that stuff, like in the case of your grandfather speaking to you about, you know, don't go in the quarries, some of it is cautionary, but some of it is also, like you said, to exercise your own fears and those that would be recognizable in an audience of children. So how much when you write either of those, the poetry stuff or there's humor in there too. Do you add that in consciously? Do you attempt to lighten it sometimes? Is there an element where you're thinking, you know, this could be useful to somebody else, or is it all, you know, is all that stuff kind of just part of what's happening under the surface, below the writer's guide?
It just, that in reference to that poem in particular, it just came out that way. It was like you point out the humor and stuff. I didn't I wasn't cognizant of like what I was doing. I knew I wanted to write, say, this poem. When I first kind of thought about it, I was like, wouldn't it be, it always starts out that way. It's like, wouldn't it be weird, or wouldn't it be cool, or wouldn't it be nice, or wouldn't it be terrifying if I wrote a poem about the fact that I was scared of the dark, and that this was the kind of Bigfoot-esque thing that I would see in the darkness. Like, that's the thing that I was afraid that was coming after me. Like, if I put that in a poem, I get over it for good, you know? That was like, or if I put it in a short story, like my collection, if I write about those fears in the way that I felt them and really captured it, would I be able to get over it? And I found that it has helped. So it's been very therapeutic with stuff. Like, I can tell you when I became afraid of the dark. And I wrote about this in the intro to the second book, but it's all because my dad went to Hershey Park. And when he came home, because my family was visiting from Puerto Rico, and when he came home, he gave me this thing, and I don't remember what it was exactly. But I used to describe it as a giant, like, almost like a green bean. It wasn't an M&M because that's Mars, and I know, like, Hershey's doesn't do M&Ms, I don't think. But it had, like, a big smiley face. It was, like, this green something. and it had like arm, it had like Mickey Mouse arms and like the Mickey Mouse legs with the shoes. I remember that, and it was big. It was almost as big as me. So I went, I put it on Toy Chest, and I went to bed that night and didn't realize that its eyes and its mouth glowed in the dark. None of us knew that. So when a car backfired on Canal Street, I woke up, and that was the first thing I saw. So then, aww, as all little kids' natural defense towards monsters and boogeymen, you hide under the bed covers because they can't get you under there. Until my mom came in to check on me. She put her hand on my shoulder. I thought it was that thing, and I fell right off the bed and rolled into my Ghostbusters tent. And then I was like horrified ever since of whatever. So there you go.
Oh, and, no.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? If that's what it takes to write fun stuff, then I'm all in favor of it. I think it's a great thing. So you mentioned the second book. Let's talk a little bit about that second book. It's when is it coming out? Tell us what it's about. What can we look for?
Oh, the second book is out. I wrote it's my third book that's on the way
okay.
in 2 weeks. But the second book is A Rustle in the Attic, and it's just horror stories. It's tales of horror and the bizarre because like I said, I wrote it based off of like fears that I had, and there's another story in there. It's like where like there's a story about a man who discovers a serum that makes him immortal.
Yeah.
Like impervious to certain damages and things. Because to me, like the thought of immortality is like horrifying. So I wrote a story about it. I was thinking about it. Because I always wrote these things like. My favorite book is Frankenstein.
It's a good one.
I know, because she wrote it when she was 16, and I'm like, how do you do that?
It's marvelous.
I know. And I touched on that because I was like, what a horrifying thing to think about, but at the same time, I wanted my kind of Prometheus in that regard, like something that you think is a gift turns out to be a curse. And I touch on that. So, like I said, the second book, A Rustle in the Attic, is mostly all dealing with fears that I had to cope with growing up, and some of which I still do cope with. And then using the formats that, like the storytellers, the way they used it, going back and reading, like, Ambrose Bierce and Poe and Lovecraft, and thinking to myself, okay, how did they do that? How did they scare the hell out of me? And how can I do that to the people that are kind enough to read my stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Because
I want to try to horrify you. I want to make you feel the way I feel about these certain things. I feel that me as a writer with those that choose to read my stuff more than anything.
Hmm.
I like to be approached by people who have read the horror collection and say, like, I've always had a fear of this too. And you like, you really hit the nail on the head with like what it's like to cope with that, or what it's in those characters, or in that bizarre situation that's like blown out of proportion, of course, because it's, you know, you're dealing with ghosts and monsters and the unexplainable. But then when we were kids, that's what we dealt with because we couldn't process it. So we're like, this is all horrifying. It must be this. And then you don't realize how outlandish it is. So really trying to capture that.
And to share it with others, which makes for an interesting kind of bonding, maybe hazing experience sometimes, I would imagine. But definitely bonding, you know, you get that universality issue of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It does help you to overcome it, to be able to share it. That's, I think, that's one of the first steps in getting over any of our childhood fears. Let's. We're running out of time, as always happens. Let's talk about this new book, and then I want to hear something from it. So let's talk about what it is.
Okay. The book that's coming in a couple of weeks in September is it's called Blessed Are the Snakes. And it's going to be poetry there's going to be some haiku in there because I always dabble with haiku when it comes to like, if I try to remember things, sometimes I'll write down a haiku to try to help me remember certain, like if I'm taking like a class or, cause I teach. So if I'm doing like a training seminar or something, I'd be like, all right, that's really interesting to remember. I'll turn it into a haiku just so it helps you memorize it. So I put a couple of haikus in there just for people to kind of bat around. And the last part of the book is it has one short story in it, which is the one that I mentioned about my grandfather's warning. And mm-hmm. the story is written. It jumps between the dialogue of the grandfather in Pennsylvania German accent, in his harsh Pennsylvania German accent, telling like, oh yeah, there was this thing that we did and went to the quarry to shoot rats and I saw this thing. And then it goes to the narration of my grandfather as a child with his brother and how he discovers this thing. And I've already had a couple people read it and go, did this actually happen? Like, is this a thing? Like, and I say, no, it's not real. It was just a warning that we got when we were kids, like me and my husband. And that kept us all right, away from going. Yeah.
Yeah. If you told it well enough, I'm sure it would scare any of us the hell away from a quarry. What read us something from the collection, please.
Okay. I'll read this one. A short one called Consumption. I dreamt of Keats chiseling his name on a Grecian urn as his throat slowly closed and his hands bled. I thought of you as I fixed the antique typewriter, swearing as the poem slowly began to escape me. Maybe I have this whole thing backwards. You following the pipes from the furnace, wondering why it won't kick on, as the family watched their breath in the kitchen. Maybe you have this whole thing backwards. You just wanted the furnace to start burning. I just wanted the furnace to keep burning. Keats, his fire had long been extinguished. Next time, please believe me when I tell you that all of us really aren't that different.
Lovely. Very nice.
I wrote that about my father because he and I worked on the furnace because I live in a really old house, and he came here to help me fix up the furnace. And I collect typewriters, and I had a typewriter ribbon snap, and then the hammers got stuck, and I couldn't figure it out, and then I finally did. And then he couldn't figure out why the furnace was leaking, and then he finally did. And I always liked Keith. He's one of my favorite writers.
Mm-hmm.
And I always called my father an artist because he's a brilliant cabinet maker. But he's always like, I'm no artist. So I kind of wrote that for him.
It's a lovely, lovely tribute.
Thank you.
Tell us where we can find your books, please.
My books are on Amazon, and they're also on the publishing company's website, which is Red Dashboard, which I believe is reddashboard.com, I think.
Yep. Yes, it is.
I should know that. Definitely is. It's Red Dashboard LLC. But, yeah.
And people can Google you.
Yeah. And if I don't know. I have some at bookstores around the Doylestown, New Hope, Pennsylvania area that were nice enough to stock my stuff.
Ryan Torres, it's been a pleasure. We are all out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming and speaking to us about your work and sharing those pieces and just giving us a whole new look at some ideas about poetry that we have. I appreciate you taking the time on this Sunday. Thank you for joining me.
And I thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Hoping everyone gets a chance to check out your work. You can find him on social media, on the internet, and everywhere else. And he does appear at readings in different places. You can also find information about that at Red Dashboard. And I hope to see you soon at some event coming up. He's always a wonderful reader. If you get a chance to hear him, don't turn it down. Thank you for
Thank
listening,
you.
Everyone. We'll be back soon with someone else and more poetry. Have a great week. Bye-bye.